This is CliffCentral.com.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Live on Cliff Central.
Hello, South Africa. This is Siyabonga Beyile live on the world's best podcast station, which is Cliff Central. This is another installment of the Threat Exchange. I'm really excited to be here, honored to be here every week, bringing you amazing, amazing conversations from amazing guests. My guest today is Lazi Mathebula. He's actually running very, very late, and I think we should actually roast him when he arrives. So we're going to do that. But guys, today's show's theme is around reversing poverty patterns. So tell me, so part of today's show, what poverty patterns is for me is the fact that as black people for generations and generations, we tend to repeat the same patterns that don't necessarily build us as human beings or progress us as black people. For example, I know I come from a family where men don't necessarily stay long in marriages. They usually get divorced. They don't know how to commit. So I am the first generation that's trying to reverse that process. Some people are dealing with the fact that their family is just not good with money. So what poverty pattern is holding you and your family back? Please WhatsApp us on 0797482090. Tell us what poverty pattern is your family facing that you are trying to reverse. Also, please, you can tweet us at The Threat Exchange on Twitter. Let us know what you think of my show. If you hate it, tell us you hate it. If you love the show, tell me you hate the show. Just before we get started on the show, and just because we And one thing I like doing on my show is that I like introducing the show, but then I like getting the energy up. I like making people dance. I like giving good vibes to begin the show, you know, laying the foundation. But before we start that, I have some cleanup to do. So what does it mean to be a man in today's world? There's a lot of confusion about this and a lot of anger directed at men. This conversation is about masculinity. Everyone needs to hear. In this raw and authentic series of 6 podcasts, Craig Wilkerson and Khalil Orris start from the premise that true masculinity is a great gift to the world. Equally relevant to men and women, it provides profound insights into why men behave the way they do. It unpacks the 3 core desires at the heart of every man, the question every boy needs answered on his journey to manhood. The 4 big lies about masculinity, what wounds the masculine heart, and the one thing that every man wants from woman more than sex. Man to Man Talks is brought to you by Carling Black Label. Drink responsibly, not for sale, for under the persons at the age of 18. Available now on cliffcentral.com. I love that there's all these conversations springing up around men. You know, I think it's very important. One thing is we always hear that men are trash, men are this, men are that. But I mean, I don't think that's a progressive conversation. We need to start holding men accountable to their actions and actually having conversations around what actually the fuck is going on with men. So I encourage you guys to actually check out this podcast on cliffcentral.com. Tell us what you think. Tell us how you feel about it. And to begin today's show, you know, guys, I always love house music and I always get like hated on by hip hop guys to say I don't play enough hip hop. But I'm still going to play house today. And then when Lazi arrives, I will play some hip-hop music for you guys. But what I'm going to play today is I've really been listening to the Sun L album lately, and I really, really, really love it. So I'm going to play some 2 tracks from his album and tell me what you think. Let's start the show, man. Let's have some fun, stretch out. I know some of you are at work. You're frustrated. Someone has made you angry. Some of you are looking at Twitter haters, or some of you are just going through a really rough patch right now. So I hope that some of my music today and these conversations can really motivate you and put you in a better space. Welcome to The Threat Exchange. I'm Siya Beyile. Let's begin the show.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Damn, such a good song. How amazing was that? I hope all of you are feeling good now. You're feeling relaxed. I've laid the mood for today's show. And guys, like, today's show is going to be really, really painful for me because I'm going to be talking about a sensitive issue, you know. And the reason why I want to talk about this issue is because it's something that I've been sort of personally investigating in my own life. But also at the same time, it's something that I've been investigating externally. And as black people, we're dealing with so much pain. You know, some of this pain is inherent from just being black South Africans. But some of this pain comes from deep within our families, you know, within our cultures, within our religions. And, you know, what inspired me to do this show was because lately I've just been seeing a lot of negativity, especially on social media, especially in the news. And most of the time, the sad part about it is that as black people, we are constantly trying to bring each other down. You know, if we hear about someone who's black and they're failing, we usually celebrate that, or we drag them, or, you know, we wish each other not the best. You know, for example, if a young black girl is driving a Porsche or a nice car, we assume that she's blessed. We're just always trying to bring each other down. And so I've just been investigating this to say, you know, why are we consistently, you know, hating on each other? Why, as black people, are we not like the Jewish community, where we want to wish each other well, where we want to see each other grow, where we want to see each other prosper? Why is it that, you know, we have so much pain and so much anger all the time? And one of the things that I've been really, really investigating is something I like to call poverty pattern or poverty patterns. And what that means essentially, so let me tell you a bit about sort of my life and how I interpret poverty patterns. So many people know that I was born 7th of December 93. Yes, I'm 24. I'm still a kid. But growing up, my early life was pretty happy. You know, we were happy. And then all of a sudden, my parents' marriage became a complete disaster. You know, my dad was cheating on my mom. There was domestic abuse. I had two younger brothers that I had to protect growing up. And then on top of that, there was a lot of like family politics. You know, my mom, being the woman that she is and who believed in the marriage, she was like, you know what, if my husband is cheating, maybe I should talk to his family. And she tried to do that, you know, talk to my dad's family, but it just blew up in her face, you know. And so I remember just growing up feeling, you know, alienated. And my mom basically had to raise these three boys by herself. But one thing that started happening, especially because in the black community, one of our biggest downfalls is that we don't believe in therapy. You know, we don't believe in psychologists. And also, not that also we don't believe in it, it's just that asina imali to afford, number one. Number two, we don't know, you know, if there are any government platforms that allow us to talk about depression, that allow us to talk about, you know, domestic issues, what is happening, or these hotlines. So when you live in the township or you live in a rural area, you don't know that there are other spaces where, you know, you can talk about these things that are happening in your life. So I realized from a young age, not that I realized, but one of the things that I didn't realize is that seeing that whole experience between my parents, in fact, affected me on a deeper level than I actually imagined. So here I am, you know, being 16, starting my first relationship with a girl I had a crush on with good intentions. But then all of a sudden it goes really wrong, you know. And the first instinct, of course, is to say, yeah, that relationship didn't work because, you know, she was that, or I'm this, or I'm in this vibe. So I found myself being 23 and never really having a relationship that lasts. It's usually the first 6 months is exciting, and then all of a sudden the relationship goes wrong. So as of last year, one of the key things that I was dealing with, besides, you know, going through depression, but one of the key things that I was dealing with is, what are the behavioral patterns that I have that I've inherited from my family and actually from my father? And I started realizing that when I look at all the men in my family, from my mother's side, from my dad's side, all the men are actually all single. So, but all of them have so many kids, you know. I remember my uncles were married at some point, but they're no longer married, or they are married, but they, you know, when I hear the conversations in the family, it seems as though, you know, the conversations are on the fact that they are cheating on their wives and all this kind of stuff. So then I started realizing, and then I started looking at another generation, sort of my mom's dad, and I started realizing also my mom's dad also, you know, married my mother's mother and then decided that she's not good enough and then had another wife and then separated from that wife. But he ended up having like 15 kids, you know. So throughout every single generation of my family, men have left their wives. So inherently, I started realizing that all the decisions I was making in relationships, I was basically self-sabotaging without realizing it. And then when I went deeper, I started realizing that I was self-sabotaging because deep down, I actually believed that I didn't deserve love and that I didn't deserve to be in a good relationship. And that was a poverty pattern. That is a poverty pattern. So in your family, what are some of the poverty patterns that you were facing that are painful? Another poverty pattern in my family is around money. you know, where, for example, because of the men leaving the family and because of the men not being responsible, women have spent a lot of time, you know, investing in the marriage of let's build together, let's build things together. And then essentially when the man leaves, it's almost like the household's finances fall apart. So I remember when I lived with my parents, my mom and my dad were in the same household, we were living an amazing life, living in Constantia, going to a good school. But the moment my parents, you know, separated, I remember then my mom had to raise three boys by herself. And then it was really painful because we had to downsize the house we lived in. You know, we lived in a nice place, nice area. And then all of a sudden, within a blink of an eye, we were living in a house that had a leaking roof at some point. My mother's car caught fire. And literally we went through, you know, 3-4 years of just being absolutely broke. You know, so, and it has happened, that sort of chain reaction has happened in every single generation of my family. So when I talk about, you know, poverty patterns, that's exactly what I'm talking about, is that what do you feel you've inherited from either being black or being in your family that that makes you self-sabotage, you know? I listen to black people all the time when they talk to each other, where on Twitter people are saying, I'm broke, I'm that, I'm that. The way we speak about ourselves in general is not encouraging, you know. When white kids speak about themselves, you know, they don't say, I'm broke, I give up. They'll be like, I don't have money at the moment, but I'll make money. So for me lately, I've been noticing that, like, we have this deep issue of not seeing ourselves to be at a higher level of being. You know, we're consistently bringing each other down, and then most importantly, we are consistently bringing each other, we are consistently bringing ourselves down. So that's why today's show is called, you know, Poverty Patterns. And I think one of the most amazing things today is that I have a guest who can really talk to me about that. His name is Lazzy, and he arrived late, but he's here fresh as always. Lazzy is always dressed fresh. Like, I'm always embarrassed around him. Lazzy, grab the mic. Let's get you set up. Grab the mic. Okay, let me switch you on. Hello, Lazzy.
Yo, what up, dog?
How are you doing, brother?
I'm good.
How are you? But on an honest note, how are you? Because I always feel like, you know how we greet. It's always like, especially in job, it's always, yeah, like, hey, how are you doing?
The surface.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm good. But yeah. How are you? How is it life? How's life for Lazzy right now? If you had to look at last year at this moment and now looking at this year at this moment, how are you compared to then, and how are you feeling now? Are you excited about the future? Are you excited about what you're working on? What excites you in life at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, the art, you know, but like in terms of like answering your initial question to say,
yeah,
how am I doing? I'm okay, you know. I wouldn't say I'm great or I'm good, but I'm okay. I'm like level-headed right now. Just trying to focus on life and just trying to, just there's a lot of things happening, you know, and I need to like just busk it all in, or busk in it, or whatever,
yeah,
the, you know, whatever,
whatever
happens there. But like, yeah, I need to do that, you know, because, you know, like it's exciting, but at the same time, it's a lot of responsibility. You know, there's quite a whole lot of things that are on my shoulders, and you know, like you were saying, like, you know, as family, generational, we don't have that generational wealth, so we have to look out for fam. So I think right now, I'm trying to focus on family. You know,
building
family,
that foundation.
It's pretty much family work, like. That's my life, you know. It's,
yeah,
like work and family. So that's what's going on right now in my life.
What is it like adapting to that? Because like I've got into a space now. I'm growing into the space of family and work.
Mm.
And most of us, as you know, you've come from Ekasi, and I mean, I grew up in Langa Township, where the whole idea of being a stable man is seen as not being cool. Like as black men, it's this thing of,
right,
we're out with the boys,
right,
we're,
right,
out with girls. You know, our real girlfriends are at,
yeah,
home with the kid.
Yeah.
So and you've seen that happen in your personal life and also, you know, in the hood.
Right.
So how have you sort of, you know, progressed into that space, and what have been some of those challenges to put yourself in the space of discipline of being like, you know what, I'm building, this is what matters in my family and my work, and building generational wealth?
Yeah, what I told myself is that there's certain things that, you know, we have like this mentality like, yo man, some stuff I'm gonna have to learn,
yeah,
myself, you know. As an easy door, you just, if someone has done it, I don't have to do it again.
Yeah.
To actually prove that it's not gonna work, you know? So there's like the stigma way, like, nah, Antoine, do it for yourself, experience things and stuff. Say certain things that I didn't want to do because I've realized that, I mean, there's certain results to it, like the objective is always the same. So I'd,
yeah,
rather like put myself out of that, you know. So coming from the hood or growing up in the hood, like you realize that there's a lot of things that are happening here that don't happen elsewhere.
Yeah.
And anywhere else. And the stuff that's happening outside that's not,
yeah,
happening here. And so what is more exciting was like what's happening outside. So now I have to go outside to get that, because what's happening here, it's okay, but it doesn't happen anywhere else.
Yeah.
And it's this thing, like it's like a cycle where you go through it, your brother will go through it, your dad went through it, your great father, you know, your great grandfather or your grandfather. So everybody, like, it's just a cycle, and I just wanted to break that cycle and like
poverty pattern.
Yeah, let me just go and figure out life outside and see what I can do and what I can achieve, you know. And I think with dad, I did that, you know. It's like you go back to the hood and then, you know, you can see what you can literally see what you saved yourself from, or you escaped, and it's in that environment. But at the same time, you feel lost, you know, because now you are like this person who's like living this life and doing this and doing that.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, like I was saying, family and work, and family consists of like goodness, consists of like, you know, financial stability, support, and a whole lot of other things. And those are not the things you're going to find in a corner.
Yeah.
General.
I also always feel like one of the things I've started to learn is that, I mean, 2-3 years ago when I was like 21, 22, I used to think, you know what, let me go have fun with girls, go to the parties, and then eventually when I'm 30, that's when I should be building this foundation. And then you look at how, let me be honest, then you look at like white kids. I mean, I'm not saying there's no white kids that go wild, but then generally in the white kid community, white kids get married very young.
Right.
And then by the time they're 30, 35, they're multimillionaires. And
sometimes
we think, we don't realize that every intention or every move they make in their lives adds up to that.
Of course.
So, for example, like I when I think about between the ages of 21, 22, how much money I spend on just like being with girls, bottles at Taboo, which cost like 15 to 20K.
Yeah.
That's 15-20K that could have been invested in Ellen Gray for my kid one day.
Oh, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, it's that's exactly that thing of, we don't realize that all the little things, your personal life, who you're friends with, how you spend your money, we don't realize that all these little things we do on a daily basis and our daily decisions actually add up into us not becoming what we're meant to be. And then you start realizing that, like, with going out, women are amazing. I mean, as men, we all love women. But then
I love one woman. So yeah.
Yeah. but what I'm saying is, as men in general, the general consensus of men is that we exactly, sure. And we forget that, like, that's like a quick gratification. It's like we're searching for this quick gratification, where in a relationship it's a lot of work, you know. Your partner's there to build with you. Usually when you're dating a woman, she wants to build with you, and that's not quick gratification. It takes time. There's problems in the relationship because she challenges you. She's like, yo nigga, you can't do that. And Tina, we want the party and the bad life all the time. But that's unsustainable.
No doubt. I mean, for me, it's like, I don't drink, I don't smoke. When I, like, I mean, you know, growing up, obviously, I drink this and that, but I've never, in my adult life, like, since I was, like, let me say 18, I don't know, I've never devoted myself to alcohol. I'm 28 now, it's like 10 years. I mean, even before that, I wasn't, like, someone who drinks a lot or whatever. It was, like, this gang, you know?
Yeah.
So now, to this day, I don't drink, and I'm, like, in my very, I think in my prime, like, for myself, I'm in my prime years, you know? Like, I think between 24 and 30, those are your prime years, you know. Whatever you do between the times, like, it's gonna make up for whatever you become, you know.
Yeah.
So I've never smoked ever in my life, and there's that element.
Can I tell you one of the things I really, really admire about you, and I think reason why I'm one of your biggest fans?
Oh man, thanks.
Besides your incredible art and just your approach to art and create, actually, I don't like even saying create, your approach to creation. I feel like you're a creator.
Yeah.
I don't like saying you're an art. I
feel
like you're a creator.
Making
cause
things,
I feel like there's a difference between artists and creators, because, I mean, I can write a song today and release it. I'm an artist.
Right.
But I think creators think deeper. They, you know, they consider that, yo, I'd rather produce one great project for the world than produce 100 whack projects.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But for me, one of the things that I admire about you that always strikes me is how centered and grounded you are. What is it that makes you so grounded and centered? I mean, when I listen to you, that you've never been about smoking, you've never been about drinking, it's never... But how do you get into that space? How did you end up there? Let's say there's a kid right now who looks up to you that's listening, and he's drinking and he's smoking, and he's like, yo, I want to quit, but ish, I can't because, yo, my friends also smoke, it's a cool thing.
Yeah.
So he's listening to you right now and he's wondering, yo, this is my hero, and he's telling me that, yo, he doesn't drink, but where does he get that discipline from?
I mean, we all have, like, different stories, you know? We come up from different families. We have, like, you know, just different experiences, you know? And my experience was that I just thought I wanted to be for my, coming from, like, again, you know, the township, there's a lot of things that you see there that don't reflect sort of like a good future.
Yeah.
And in association, I felt like if I did that, then I'm just as, you know, I'm just as you are. And yeah. This is something I started when I was there at the time, you know?
Yeah.
But then growing up, I realized that I need my time, and I don't want my time to be, I don't want to be like always like not in my, conscious, you know? I don't want to do things that are out of my conscious state of mind, like, or very clear state of mind. I want to always confront things as they are and as I am, because I mean, I do go through things, and when I do, I have nothing when these emotions jab, you know?
Yeah.
I have nothing to duck or block with. And I feel like that's what made and created this character that I am, because there's a sense of discipline in what I do, and I think for what I'm trying to go, I want to be, not to say, like, you know, obviously there's different ways to do things, but for me, I think where I'm trying to go, I don't need no distractions, you know? And I don't want to, like, I just want to be, like, on it, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And it's not easy, but it's, like, it's the most beautiful thing, because I don't waste time. Like, time is not wasted for me. So my Sundays are Sundays, and my Mondays will never make up for a lost Sunday.
Yeah. You know, your Mondays are Mondays.
Yeah.
You're there at work.
I'm there when I'm doing what I'm doing, because, like, when you... So, like, self-employment, because, like, if you don't work for nobody...
Yeah.
There's, like, a lot of freedom, and this freedom also comes with, like... a lot of consequences. So I'm like, I'm not trying to exercise the freedom that comes with, like, being self-employed. I'm trying to exercise the privilege, which is like, yo, man, if I couldn't do this, then, you know, also there's other, like, historical things where they say, you know, when black people back in the days used to work, they used to get paid by wine, you know, and that was like their way to keep them at work. And so they said, serve them alcohol so they can be better slaves. So also that line kind of got to me, and I was like, yo.
I'm not going to lie. I just quit. I literally started quitting drinking recently. So, and the reason actually why I do this show, I think low-key, is that I get to invite people I look up to, and I get to, like, draw lessons from them. And also, like, just giving you an insight into the show, it's also like I watch a lot of Other Tone, Pharrell.
Right.
And I'm always like, why are we doing radio like this boring interview stuff? I like having this conversational thinking where people can just share stuff.
And free thinking.
So just so don't be shocked that, like, the moment you walk in, I'm just like, yo, let's talk about, like, poverty patterns.
Of course.
Feel like it's a conversation that we're having, and
we
can go anywhere.
We all have, like, I don't know about other people, but I feel like, you know, most black people, we have, like, a strand of that. You know, you can't, generational wealth, it's only starting to cover up now for some black people. They're only starting now to cover for, like, the second generation, even. Not even third or fourth, you know? So now we are, like, I'm, like, maybe first generation in my fam to be where I am right now.
Yeah.
And now my little sister, she's maybe half... maybe generation, but we're in the same generation, almost, you know. Actually,
she's your sister, so...
Yeah, she's in my... But her kids and my kids are, like, second generation, meaning that they will come into this already kind of, like, you know, laid out a blueprint for them, you know?
And then they still got to take it further than
young
that.
So that's the whole point. Like, I'm trying to... Because it's hard for me to tell you what to do, how to do right, if I'm not doing right.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for you to see me out of character if I'm trying to get you into character, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hard lesson, but I feel like nothing good comes out of comfort, and nothing good comes out of joy. Like, all this, I mean, we have to be happy, but then you can't celebrate every single day.
Yeah.
If there's nothing to celebrate.
Yeah.
Do you know
and
what
also
I mean?
Even celebration, like, why is it that we see celebration as having booze and being in the club and have, because also just going a foot back is that, like, what I find then unique about your life is that because essentially you haven't drunk your old adulthood.
Right.
And I find that some of the issues that I feel we deal with as people, especially as black people, is that the decisions that we make sometimes are influenced. We make the wrong friends because that's who we drink with.
Right.
We make friends because that's who we smoke with,
right,
weed with.
Right.
We make friends because, oh, that's the dude that does this, or that's the dude that knows the girls.
Right.
So what I want to find interesting for you is that it means then as a person you're very sharp in who you have around your space, because you're never hazed, you're never confused, you're never like, you know, like, yo, I'm chilling with you because you're great, because you're smoking.
Right.
You actually choose your people wisely.
Wisely,
does that mean your circle of people around you is very small?
Very, very, very small. My circle is pretty much, you know, my partner, my family, you know, and a few friends. And this is it. Like, I don't judge people who drink or smoke. I hang out with people who drink and smoke, because I'm not, what I do is for me, what they do is for them. we have different benefits for all the stuff that we do. I'm sure there's benefits for drinking and there's benefits for smoking.
Brother, I'll be honest. I don't know, real talk.
Yeah.
I don't think there actually is, dog.
But
like,
for
I'm
me,
not gonna lie. Like, I know we live in this woke space where it's like, yeah, what's for that person is for them, that. You know. I think that's what I hate about the world today is that, like, we actually don't call bullshit bullshit. Like, let's not lie. Like, I don't think there's a lot of, unless you're drinking with your partner and it's fun and you.
Right.
Conceive in a contained space.
But you understand what I'm saying? It's like, for me, I wouldn't judge. I mean, let me tell you what I don't judge. I just call out certain things.
Yeah, you know.
So when I grew up, growing up, I was hanging out like, I mean, coming up. Let me know. So growing up, because coming up, I used to hang out with like older guys. You know, like MK Fresh. I still hang out with him now, but he was older than me at the time, and I'm a youngin. And when I come in, I'm like, yo, obviously I don't drink, I don't smoke, and he's like, I'm gonna protect that.
Yeah.
You see now that. I'm going to make sure that you don't actually smoke and you don't actually drink. And I'm in a sense of respecting it. I'm going to say, when we go out, I'm going to get you water or like Coke or whatever. Make sure that you're good, you know? And when they pass the blunt around you, they will know. I'll try and maybe make them feel like, you know, shit for giving you blunt, knowing that you don't actually smoke. So he was always like trying to make sure that that's straightforward. Like, Pete, that's the first thing you know about me if you don't know me and I'm around him. So now, so obviously he's a big homie and I'm looking up to him and he's like telling me like, yo, don't do that. Don't do that. I know you don't do that.
And I'm gonna respect that. And I'm gonna protect that.
Do you know what I'm saying?
There's a reason why you don't do that. Where most of the time we don't respect people.
We don't respect
people. We're always like, yeah, come, have a drink, man. Come on, doesn't hurt.
It's not too
extreme. I've done it.
I'm guilty of that, actually.
That's such a crazy thing to say because I'm guilty of that whole thing of if a friend man's like, yeah, stop drinking, I'm always like, God, that's hilarious. Like, you know, we don't say, actually, there's a reason why this person's quitting drinking.
Right.
I actually need to respect that. Like, they want to grow as peoples, and this is the decision they're choosing to make.
But there's two extremes to it. There's like where you're like, okay, cool, I don't want to drink. I'm like, I don't drink alcohol. And then you feel like you don't want to drink anymore. Because I told you, like, I don't drink. And you're like, but this guy's cool, man. I think blah, blah, blah. You know? And I'm like, but it's cool. You can do it. I don't have to. I don't do it for my own reasons.
Yeah.
But now you see. And then I do have. Can you imagine living in this world, not knowing, like hanging out with people that don't drink? I mean, your life wouldn't be that exciting.
Yeah.
Life, you know, I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So I do have friends that do drink and I'm okay with that. I don't have a problem. I just don't do it. And I have my own reasons. So I respect their reasons for doing it and they respect my reasons for not doing it.
Yeah.
But now you see, when I did it, there were like maybe stupid reasons growing up. Like, would manage my lukaza to keep him out, you know, my mom couldn't afford my allowance, my drinking allowance, because other parents can't afford their kids' drinking allowance. So I was like, no, nigga, what? No, that's not gonna. Forget about that, pretty much.
It's
so,
like, also, we don't have other things, but I'm giving you money to drink. It's like, what are the priorities?
It doesn't make sense. So it's like, she put in, like, there's a lot of things, like, she was very, like, militant in her ways, you know? And with her ways like that, I picked up a lot. So my sense of discipline comes from her. Militancy, if that's a word.
Yeah.
But it comes
I find you quite militant. Like, you're always, your hair's always cut. I've never seen you sort of, if your hair's not cut, it's intentional. Like,
yeah, and I'm gonna wear a cap.
Like, you're not an unintentional. I think that's what I actually admire about you. I think you're one of the only people in the world.
Oh, come on.
Close to Virgil. No, on a real note, like, Virgil drinks smoothies. Like, that's the thing. He doesn't drink alcohol, doesn't smoke.
Right.
His thing is, I juice. You know, I juice and I eat food.
Right.
You know, but he doesn't go to gym. He doesn't believe in going to gym. But he just believes like, yo, I'm not gonna drink, I'm not gonna smoke.
Right.
But he's still such a dope guy, and he's very militant in his hair is always cut.
Right.
How he dresses is not just randomly chosen.
Right.
How he creates, it's not just I'm creating this because it's cool and trendy.
Right.
So I always like, so for me, I think one of the reasons why I've been like going through this process of quitting drinking is because like I want to create on a certain level, and the people that I look up to in the creative space,
are those
I've been like studying them. I've studied you as well. Where I go through your Instagram, where I study guys, and I look at their captions, I look at how they, what they're consuming on their Insta stories.
Right.
With Virgil, like, yo, new track, this is what I'm listening to.
Right.
And one of the things that strongly stands out is that all of the people that I look up to, they don't drink. You know, the CEO of LVMH, Bernard Arnault, he owns Dom Perignon, he owns Veuve Clicquot, he owns...
He's there.
He doesn't drink.
He doesn't.
It's like you own the best champagne brand in the world, but you don't drink. So for me, it's like, yo.
I mean, that's the higher level.
It's like
that's the highest. That's the highest level of, I don't know what to call it, but it's the highest level of some
tasteful
sort.
Living.
Yeah, tasteful living, where you like, lifestyle, it's not too conceptual. The concepts come through me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm the concept. It's like some people that say I don't do drugs, but I'm the drug. So those are the people, like, I don't, you know, I feel like I'm that kind of a vibe too. It's like, I don't do that.
Like, Virgil always says, like, he drinks, but he doesn't drink alcohol. So he's like, also, like, he's like, why is it the concept of drinking has to equate to alcohol? Why is it the concept of being high having to be on a blunt? Why?
Because it's domination.
Why can't I be high on life? Why can't I find that highness, that thrill in other things that make me perform at a higher level?
Exactly. But you do find those things. And I think for me, it was like, I had to choose my, like, I want to win, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to win all the time.
Yeah, and you don't want any, and you don't want any excuses of, I could have won, but. And then you have a lot of black people where.
And my, I was about to say that. I was about to say this. I went to Mnyama, dogs. Like, Mamuntu Mnyama. And then, being black is hard, right?
Already.
Being a woman is like being black four times, right?
Yeah.
So now, can you imagine with the privilege that you have as a man, and then you lose?
Yeah.
Like many women.
And you lose because of fucking booze.
Right. And then we have women who have, they have like, if not all the odds stacked against them, all odds are kind of stacked against them. But then they win.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, like, what's your excuse because of that, but then, you know, young child. So now there's other way, and I'm talking about my mom when I say these things. Like, she had to, you know, like, she had four kids, single parent, four kids. Boys and girls, and you're alone.
Mm.
Or like, my dude, come on, you know what I'm saying? But now I'm this person from that woman, you know what I mean? And like, God rest her soul. But it's like, so those kind of things are like things that I think about. Like, I put myself in situations where I'm like, yo, man, I'm in a privileged position right now, and I can do things consciously. Like, for instance, I do a lot of work, commercial work, all my commissions and all the stuff, the collaborations and stuff that I do. I don't remember anybody client wise being not happy because of my maybe attitude. You know what I'm saying? They're always happy about the fact that I will say, I'm going to send you something at 1:30 and send it at 11. And that's my strategy. You know? Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, yo, I'll send you this at 1. And 1 is still early, by the way.
Can you be my mentor?
We're doing this thing, dog.
Okay.
Everybody, you have to choose your mentor and then just be about it like that. You know? So for me, it's like, I always try and be like, you know what, dog? I'm like, I'm gonna be ahead of the curve, and when they get there, they get all this. Just like, I invite you to like a party for Wednesday, but everything is done by Monday.
Yeah.
And then you accidentally, rule it out by Tuesday.
Yeah.
Then you realize, oh, this thing has been here since Monday.
Yeah.
And this is only for tomorrow. What is this, you know? So I think also, it's not only that you're going to get more work from the person that you're impressing, but you're going to get work because the universe is up. It's like, you'll never get work if, I'm just saying, let me explain this. So if you have a lot of things in your draft or outbox, you know? So let's say, metaphorically speaking, you have an outbox and you're trying to send messages, right? And then there's a lot of stuff in your outbox. It will never send all of it because the data is saying, yo, fam, I don't have much. But then if you get done, things done, there's space for other things like emails, right? So now the universe conspires in your favor if you're working hard. If you would say, I'm clearing all the works, I'm clearing all the things that I need to do or need to clear or need to do, then there's opportunities for other things that are opening up because there's space for work to come in, you know? So the minute you stack up, there's nothing. It's like Plomis Pazza shop and there's 10 dudes in there and one is buying. You're going to think there's 11 people there, so you won't buy. You're just going to pass through. And then the guy lost, you know, business. So I think that's the kind of like strategy that I have. It's like, if I can be just a bit of way ahead, it can be hard sometimes, you know? But I try to like, let me just make sure that I stay on my thing. So if I get a brief now, already I'm on it. Do research, do drafts.
So it's almost like, because we always talk about this higher level of performance as black people, where we like, we want to be the next billionaires, want to be black excellence this, but most of us don't position ourselves to be able to get the work at that level.
Right.
So it's like, it's like this quote that I saw, I think three, four days ago. It's like, you can't want to be a billionaire when you don't have a billionaire work ethic.
Right.
And I think that's exactly what you think about. It's also that thing of, you can't be wannabe like Cristiano Ronaldo if you're not out there training every single day and preparing yourself to get that 150 million rand deal.
Yeah.
So I love that.
And no shortcuts.
Yeah. So I love the fact that you're honest in the fact that you believe in grafting, so that it's not just about grafting in order to get money, but it's also for you to have that fitness and that discipline to be in a space where you can handle more. That level and more.
Exactly.
And I think most black people, especially now, some of us take a lot of corners where we make lots of money, but then we don't have the discipline or the training to handle that level.
Exactly. It's like, for instance, for the month of September, I'm launching 4 or 5 projects with different, like, you know, brands or whatever. And these are things that they all have to be done this month. And they're done.
Yeah.
Young Todd?
Yeah.
If I had, like, I mean, I don't know what it is. I'm not trying to be a billionaire. I'm not trying to put myself up there, you know. But I just think that I want to have a work ethic that's Lazi's work ethic.
Yeah.
You know, I'm at work when I'm not supposed to be. Like, I'm doing the really mundane things that you would think, nah, but I'll just get someone else to do this for me. I'll do it for myself, you know. And I think someone is watching. You know, someone said to me the other day at the studio, he's like, yo, Ovik, I don't know if you know Vic Tajlamin.
He's amazing.
Because we kind of like in the same.
You see, he's one of the people I look up to. So right. When I look at him, I look at you, I look at Virgil.
Right.
It's almost as if like, it's like you guys talk to each other without talking. Where I'm like, these guys are all like similar in the fact of their discipline. Right. But it's like, where do they get this download from?
Yeah. But then he's like, because we work in the same vicinity, like literally, he's my neighbor. Like, we're at Conhill, Constitution Hill, there's like a studio, whatever. Like, so he's like, literally, out of the blue, you know, he says to my girl, I'm coming through with my girl. He's like, yo, man, you know. So he greets me, hey, whatever. He says to her, like, you know, there's people that have, there's a work ethic, but then there's also Lazi's work ethic, and that's something that I've never seen in anyone so far that I know, you know. And I'm like, whoa, okay, this is, you caught me off guard. You know? It's like, yeah, I'm for real. Like, you never not working, and I'm not saying you are doing nothing, but obviously with what you do, you have something to do all the time, and that's really it's a bit.
You're
scary.
Always investing your time wisely.
Wisely, and you
so
always.
So if you're not working with family, which is. Work, but it's like you're working on yourself and growing yourself. So
you know?
he means that you work your life. You are building that life. Yeah.
Because my day starts like 5-4 a.m. and I don't have a 9-to-5. So I'm going to get in and catch up on all the most important things of the day, like drafting things, sending stuff. So by 10, I am done.
You're ahead. By the time people at 10 are still like
banging
getting coffee,
they get
yawning,
like, and this is different people.
Only by 12 they get into it.
Yeah, and then I'm like, by 10 I'm maybe take a shower, breakfast, and then head out to the studio.
Yeah.
Do like stuff, work, like actual work, ngezandla, you know.
Yeah.
And then do admin here and there, but mostly I'm on the hands, I'm on the move, I'm doing whatever I have to do, and then by 6, literally 6 o'clock on the dot, I'm leaving. I don't waste any time. Like, I can't say it's 6:05. No, if it's 6, I'm out. If there's something burning, it's gonna have to burn. Type thing, you know. Because then there's something wrong with me if I left. So I have a 12-hour work day, and then I have like a good 5 to 6 hours family time.
And then the other.
And then
six
the other
hours
6 hours between 4 and 6, it's like sleep time.
Yeah.
So it can be whichever way, but then as long as I can put in 12 hours of work, And then there's 12 hours, 6 hours of the 12 has to be something that I really, really love.
So basically, I'm honored. You've given me a part of
the
that
formula.
You've given me part of your 12 hours, which I'm honored then, because you're very strict and intentional about your time.
Six,
you don't just do it.
Right.
Yeah.
So by now, it's like, even now, running late is because I had to go drop off something. Those are like things that I can't do. Look, the reason I do, let me explain. The reason I wake up at 5... Because, like, this is like, I don't have to wake up and shower at 5.
Yeah.
I wake up at 5 and go to my desk at the crib
and
work.
Yeah.
I can be in my pajamas or whatever. Just so I can get the workout by 10. Everything is done. Admin is done by 10 or whatever. I need to send work, whatever.
And then you shower.
Yeah.
And then you go to the studio.
Then someone calls me, like, yo, I need this. I need to drive out quick. So all the stuff that I
so
need to
do. So you're ready.
You're
always ready for.
Because I don't want to be caught driving. And someone's like, yo, I'm waiting for that email.
Ah,
it's the most awkward
thing. You know what's
interesting?
You know what's brilliant about that is that most of the time when it alleviates your stress.
Exactly.
Because all of us are always stressed because we always feel like something is happening at an inconvenience. And usually it's because you're like, oh, I have this deadline, but damn, my mom's sick. Or this. this is happening, where you are like, I'm going to beat inconvenience
right.
by always making sure that my work is always done, so that if there's anything that is messed up that happens, I'm ready to do it, and I'm not, while I'm dealing with it, I'm not thinking work.
It's called reprogramming.
Bro.
So look.
Now let me,
I'm going to,
sorry. Let's say.
So
no,
we have
talk.
Like, usually work for the world, for everybody, it's like 9 to 5, right?
Yeah.
So if you're going to wake up at 8 and say, I'm going to start work at 9, you're part of the program, you know? Because then you're going to go back and forth with everybody, you know? And then if you start work at 5, you are like literally, what, 4, like 6, 7, 8, 9, 4 hours ahead of wow. the program.
Yeah.
So now you're going to start your hours, your 9 o'clock is at 5. And then your, like, your lunch... Even your lunch is like still at work, like 4 hours, you can't work 4 hours straight without lunch, right?
Yeah.
It's like 10, 11, 12, 1, then it's lunch. So between 12 and 1, it's lunch. So you, when you mock out your 4 hours, you're already, it's lunch time for you. That's when you yeah. shower and have breakfast.
Yeah.
And then they start their hours.
Damn.
Then you out. So when they're trying to figure you out, you out.
Yeah. Now let me ask, I feel like, please, like, we need to talk about you coming back, because like it's almost end of the show, because it's only
right,
an hour.
Right.
But one last question I want to ask is that, like, when growing up, we are always like thinking our parents are hindering us from like having life experiences. So like I remember thinking that, like, you've actually, you know, filled in a gap for me, because I used to always think my mom would be like, don't drink, don't do this, and I'd always be like, yeah, my mom is preventing me from living.
Right.
But I missed the lesson of, she's teaching me a principle so that I can perform at a high level. So
man,
how were you able to receive that and have the maturity? Do you think it's something you were born with, because you're very self-aware and you're very thoughtful?
I'm gonna give the credit to that, to the fact that I was born with it, you know, because obviously growing up, my mom used to drink, then she quit. And then, you know, around you, there's people that drink, and then most of the people that I love actually used to drink, and then they quit, you know? And then things changed.
So you got to see both sides of who yeah. they were when they were drinking yeah. and when they were not drinking.
But there was like free thinking as a person. I was like, yo, I love everybody, but I think I want to be this guy. I want to be literally a guy that you can't compare to anybody. Mm. That's me growing up as a kid. I was like, I want to be different. I want to be this. I don't want to drink. I don't want to do that. And I didn't. So, in that sense, literally, I couldn't ngicala isiLungu in grade 11. Because me and my friend had a fight for like yeah. for the fact that we're not talking English. I was like, oh, no, I won't. Why should I, you know? And then I was like, actually, maybe when I was in grade 12, that's when I started, like, literally speaking English. And that was, like, in 2007. Wow. I wasn't speaking English all this entire time.
Yeah.
But now, that's self-taught. That's some self-taught shit, you know? And through rap and everything else.
And also, then, do you believe there's nothing you can't do?
I can do anything.
Because when I look at you, it's also,
I mean,
like...
anything that
you,
I want to do.
You command the universe. Because I always believe that as humans, we always have... there's not enough... We're always complaining. Especially in South Africa, we are always victims. And I feel like the way that you are operating, it's like, I don't depend on government. I don't care what environment I'm in. But if I'm lazy and I have the work ethic and the discipline, I'm going to make it happen.
Give me a desk and a chair, bro.
Last question. I have literally a minute. What does creation mean to you?
It means being selfish with your thinking, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think being selfish with the thinking and putting effort to it, and none, very recognizable effort, and none, you can't shake my effort. You can't say, nah, this is not good enough effort, type effort,
yeah.
you know?
Do you then think, like, the art that you consume in music, you know, film, is that you do consume things that speak to who you are?
Yeah.
Like, do you consume artists of that same level of discipline?
Yes.
Who are those artists? I'm actually
right now. I'm listening to Victor Antoni because I like jazz, so it's Victor Antoni right now, and a lot of like South African jazz, like old folk, old jazz,
yeah.
and I mean Black Thought on the rap,
yeah.
on my playlist, Squatter Camp from back in the days, Rah Rah, like Cut and Join,
yeah.
just like that high level of at the time when you were
yeah.
doing that, it was like, what, you know?
Yeah.
So obviously Kanye and just everything else, man. At that time talks to me, you know, because not everything can talk to you at the same time.
Yeah.
And you have pockets.
Okay, we have to be done. Yeah. My brother, thank you so much for being here.
Good.
But I definitely think that we should do another one very soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, this is Lazi Matebula. He's Lazi on Instagram, Bombisa.
Yeah.
I'm definitely gonna bring him. I think him and I should do a series about a lot of different topics that I think are very interesting. Thank you so much. I'm Sia Bile. Thank you for joining us. And I'm going to play you a song. I hope like I do you justice. But I praise the Lord for you being here.
Peace, man. Thanks.
This is CliffCentral.com.